What's good, Wagering World? It's your boy Five Star in Vegas, broadcasting live as always from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada. This is the Wagering World, and I'm in here with the OG of the show. He's been with me since day one, broadcasting live from his cabin in the wilderness of California. Man, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know. What's good, Spreaderstay? How are you, man?
Man, I'm excited. You know, we missed last week there. We were both pretty busy, but we're able to talk about these conference finals today, and then we'll do a French Open preview on Friday.
Yeah, we'll definitely get more into depth on the French Open. We'll get Ski in here. You know, he's the newest tennis fanatic, so I look forward to hear his point of view on everything too, as well on the tennis. How everything going, man? With getting the farm together,
man, it's finally starting to slow down. I can get back to work and just concentrate on sports here, so that's a lot of fun for me. And then we're switching over into tennis here, so I'm finally feeling, you know, like moving's a big process, and obviously I changed my lifestyle too, but I feel like I'm really ready to dive in and get back to work. I got the houses up and running, and you know, internet's up and running. I got the new truck and everything, so things are going great, man.
Yeah, I'm just tucked off in the den, got a quiet house today. So that's always a good thing we're able to do the show. But my clock is all thrown off, man, from getting up early watching tennis, man. I probably slept like 3 hours this morning. I know you'd be like, you're crazy. I'll just play the numbers, but we always talk about it. You got to watch it. So I think
you
get up sometimes too, unfortunately. You have to get up too, right?
Yeah, no, I'm up, but I'm not always watching it. So, you know, I'll be in the car, and I'm usually listening to Skis ahead of the spread show on my way to work.
Great. That's great. Just before we get into these conference finals and all of this stuff, because that's the main talk right now, the sports betting world, I just want to get your opinion real quick on something that is really troubling me, and that's the fan base split that we have with the Rockets. Instead of us being grateful and, you know, saying, wow, this is such a young team in Vegas. You know, we think of everything with odds because we're sports bettors. So we kind of look at things more rationally because, one, we have to deal with being able to get over things quick when they don't go right and look at the bright side so that we can be prepared for the next battle with the sports books. And also, we kind of do long term because we're not necessarily worried about losing the day as long as we win the month, the week, the year. So I think we're a little bit more rational on sports than most people. But man, I haven't heard anyone say, like, great job, Rockets. We really are pushing forward. Only thing everyone's ready to do is this trade. They got this draft, I mean, this trade simulator where half the fan base wants to trade Jalen, half wants to trade Alper, Sagoon. So what this mostly showed me is that Amin is the most popular Rocket, right? Because no one's ever talking about trading them. But for some reason, fans that like Jalen don't like Sagoon. And the ones who like Sagoon don't like Jalen. Just a lot of infighting. And it's crazy to me because, as I said, with us being bettors and guys that typically lean on Vegas to kind of see how good a team is, we remember going into the season that Vegas didn't even have the Rockets making the playoffs. You and I talked about this, and I said they were going to make the jump, and he was like, it's going to be tough with how the West is. So what do you think about the infighting with the Rockets? And also, what's your opinion? Do they need to make a trade for the upcoming year?
Okay. So my opinion on the infighting of the Rockets is that if you were to make a target audience for each fan base, right? So, like, let's just say NASCAR. What's our target audience?
Right.
It's white people in the South, right? Tennis.
Right.
What's our target audience? It's mostly affluent people who play tennis.
Right.
I swear the NBA fan base is just a bunch of haters. You got to be a hater. That's our target audience, right? If you want to get online and talk shit and arguing online is your thing, man, and you just want to celebrate the downfall of successful people, the NBA is the sport for you. More people seem to celebrate the team that loses than ever give credit to the team that wins. When the Timberwolves won, who went online and said, oh, great job for the Timberwolves to beat the Lakers? No, it was all about the Lakers losing. About the Lakers losing, right? And same thing with Boston. Same thing with Cleveland. So I'm not surprised that the fan base is just a bunch of haters, because it's like literally the worst part of the NBA. I think I will enjoy the NBA 10 times more if Twitter didn't exist, because I think it just puts all these thoughts in my head that I don't really need to have. Now, do they need to make a trade? No, they don't. Should they? Well, if the right trade's available, I think they should. And, of course, you know, I think we disagree with this. I mean, I would be all in on Giannis. I think that, you know, this roster around him would be great, but I don't need to give up anything that I don't need to. I don't need to make a trade. Here's the deal. So, gosh, if I were building around one, I don't even know which one I build around.
It's just let them play. I mean, it just ended up where OKC built around SGA, but Raphael Stone and the front office for the Rockets look at Jalen Green just like SGA, even though a lot of the fan base does. Y'all hit that like right now if you're in here rocking with the Wagering World. The reason that he looks at Jalen Green the way that he does, that fans don't understand, and he even explained it. He said, in the matchup against the Warriors, we felt like everyone did their job. We just didn't take advantage of a lot of matchups. Jalen was blitzed a lot, and I felt like he did what was right within the offense. It was his first playoffs, so that's one thing. But second, the front office is telling you pretty much the Warriors were playing Sagoon one-on-one. He was supposed to punish them and go for 40, but unfortunately he had a couple bad showings with not being able to convert. You know, I've always talked about I love Sagoon, the guy, but what I dislike about Sagoon is his inability to make decisions when he's doing his moves. He kind of shakes himself too much. You know how you got the guy who just over dribbles, like one of those point guard, he kind of does that in the paint with his feet. He has so much good footwork, so many moves that he kind of counters too much. Like, pick your move, do your move, go to your strength and finish. And the Warriors really capitalized on the fact that he couldn't punish whoever came on the switch or if they played him one-on-one with Draymond Green. And Steve Kerr even said in the press conference that that's what they were, you know, basing their defense on. They didn't think Sagoon could score enough to beat them in one-on-one matchups. And he'll get better. He's a good player. The reason that the front office is behind Jalen Green, though, is because it's a wing league. Like, we've seen this before. And Udoka's system is about wings. I think he's done so much to get the best out of Sagoon, and he deserves a lot of credit for changing up the way that he kind of runs his thing. Because what people don't understand is if they make a trade, it would be Sagoon for Giannis. Because Giannis, with our athletic wings, this is a crazy defense and a crazy transition team like that. So don't get in your feelings if Sagoon gets traded. I'm not going to get in my feelings if Jalen gets traded, but I doubt that he does, just because, one, he has the most points in his draft class, and that draft class was one of the best draft classes we've had in the last decade. He has like 1,000 more points than everyone else in that class, and he's played, I think, about 100 more games than everyone else in that class. He's by far the leader in most games played, and we know that means everything to an owner, to a GM. The best ability is availability. Jalen Green has been an Iron Man. So all of those things that needs to be approved, they see the potential. So why would they trade him at his age, being the best in his draft class, even though Cade has been a superstar this year, been the all-star before him? Jalen's right on the right path. He's averaged 20 points per game in his career. And as I said, has some really great numbers if you dig into him. And also, I think that they see that success kind of goes with if Jalen plays well, because in the games that he had over 30, the Rockets were 15-1. So I'm very interested to see how things go. My perfect scenario would be to stay packed, grab Con Nipel at number 10, a shooter who can spread the floor to put in a rotation, give more minutes to Reed Shepard. If we can replace Fred Van Fleet, replace him with a different guy, but if Fred can come back at a reasonable contract, it's team friendly, bring him back. I mean, he has great rapport with the team. Stay packed, you know, because you see with OKC, the best thing to do, man, is to beat you with numbers. Most of these teams that are in the playoffs, people aren't noticing the same thing about the Pacers and the Timberwolves. OKC is the same thing. They beat you with numbers, with waves being deep, you know. So I hope that we stay as we are. And just, guys, every time you turn on the playoffs, you just got to deal with the fact that if you're a Jalen Green hater, you got to watch the biggest, the largest. You got to watch that Wingstop commercial every day. So I think the Jalen's going to be around, man. Another thing I want to ask you about, I know you can't stand the Lakers. So do you think that the Lakers and the Mavs and the NBA had a backdoor deal going and said, yeah, that's why we didn't see all of the draft capital that we expected and more players, because Dallas knew the whole time that they were going to get the number one pick and continue the tradition of great white players in Dallas, because now they'll have Cooper Flagg after having Dirk and Luka, probably the two best white boys to ever play besides Larry Bird in the NBA. So was it a conspiracy spread?
Yeah, of course. I mean, when the NBA cheated the Sacramento Kings out of the NBA Finals in 2002, what's the big deal? You lose what, the 28th market? You can't lose the fourth major media market. Do you know how many Mavericks fans were absolutely done? Just done.
Yeah.
They were not going to sell any season tickets. Yeah, they just they couldn't afford to lose that market. So, yeah. I mean, it's an entertainment league. And people are like, oh, they've got Ernst & Young to audit them. Go look up Ernst & Young and see how many scandals they've been involved in.
Right.
I mean, it's not like... Right.
they're like basically BlackRock. It's like BlackRock. Like, what can you do? Even Shaq's been trying to give up a little game. You know, after you get older, as we know, as you get older, you care less about telling the truth. You know, So Shaq was like, David Stern asked him, do you like warm weather or cold weather? And he said, warm weather. And he said, mysteriously, Orlando beat the odds and beat both the cold weather teams. And I ended up being a Magic. Yeah, we know this goes on. Last thing before we get into the games. Any opinion on the RG3 versus Brian Clark beef that's burning up Twitter?
Wait, who's beefing?
Great, you don't even know about it. RG3 and Ryan Clark.
Those are like two of my least favorite pundits on TV. Right. I can't think of any good breakdowns either of them have given. The only reason I've watched Ryan Clark is recently he interviewed Belichick.
He gets all the great interviews. He's got one of the best podcasts as far as in content. He goes a little too far, because what I don't like about Ryan, and I like Ryan the guy, and I know him because, don't worry about how I know him. Just put it like this. His brother used to date a girl that I dated, and he ended up marrying her.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it don't matter, because, you know, I love my wife. I've been married a long time. This was years ago in Houston, but the girl that he ended up marrying, which is his sister-in-law, she liked me a lot, just put it like that. So we used to date and things like that and hang out a little bit in Houston. But Ryan's a good dude. What I don't like is you can see clearly on the pivot that he's like a political tool. So you could tell a lot of the liberal ideas are pushed through him because they know that's his, you know, they feel like that's his breeding ground. So he like the stuff with bringing in, you know, the talking about the homosexuality on there and all that stuff, and the girls playing with the guys, that stuff I don't agree with at all. And it's easy to cause yourself to get a lot of enemies when you talk about those type of touchy topics that offend guys who are dads like myself. So that part I don't like about the pivot. What I do like about the pivot is he's a great interviewer, and he does have a lot of, you know, really good guests on there. RG3 just doesn't do anything that I can just hang my hat on and say that, wow, that was a great take, RG3. But what he did, he stuck his foot in his mouth and tried to say that Angel Reese hates Caitlin Clark because of whatever happened this weekend with, I guess, she fouled Angel kind of hard. Angel was obviously frustrated because they were getting their butts whooped and, you know, kind of reacted. But it's sports. I guarantee you, they probably text that night. Caitlin Clark, this stuff is just like WWE, and no one understands it or realizes it. We as bettors, we do. as I said, we always keep a sound mind. We don't get emotional with this stuff. Like, I only deal with the facts. People think I like perk people or certain players, certain athletes. No, I just defend data and facts, and I trust my eyes. I bet a lot of sports, and I watch a lot more sports than a lot of people. So I trust me when it comes to that. And if I have an opinion on someone, it's derived from me watching them perform multiple times and many times. But he said that, Angel was jealous of Caitlin, and I know what hate looks like. And, you know, pretty much doing the Jason Whitlock, saying stuff that he probably really doesn't even believe himself, but he knows that it's a real big crowd of people on X that'll make his likes go up and make his interactions go up for money if he says these things. And that's the problem that I have with it. Like, I don't like when people are just playing to the crowd, like, tell the truth. And so Ryan Clark kind of responded and said that, because of course Ryan Clark went to LSU, personally knows Angel Reese and her family. So he kind of said that RG3 should not be doing the things that he does on his page, which he does get a little bit crass on there, doing things like having pictures with his wife and saying stuff like milk lover and, you know, like, come on, man, this is your wife. Like, you know, like, that's not cool to even clown your wife like that. But he took that as if Ryan Clark was saying that he was attacking his family. He wasn't attacking his family. He was just telling them, like, yo, your wife, who was white, is sitting behind you as you talk bad about Angel Reese. That's just not a good look, brother, with all of the stuff that you've shown on your page before, showing this, like, you know, stuff about milk and, like, making it a big deal. If you're in love with someone, it doesn't matter what color they is. So by you highlighting it and always talking about the fact that she's white, it's like either you feel like that's a big deal and, like, you're beating your chest, or I don't know what it is, but it's a really weird situation. It's like you said, it's kind of like Dumber and Dumber, you know, battling each other because they're both not too popular of guys. But I just want to touch with you on that one. I didn't know if you had.
It was so. I'll jump back in. I'll be honest, I haven't been paying that much attention. I've been trying to spend less time on Twitter, probably because it's NBA haters who are just out in full force, you know.
Yeah, man.
My buddy texted me this morning. It just pisses me off, you know.
Man, I take about 10 minutes to 15 minutes out the day in little 3-minute intervals and make sure I go cuss out a couple people. That's all. And then
there you go.
Back to my day. All right, man, let's get to the present.
All right, let's talk about it. The first game, would you want to go with tonight's game or do you want to go with Pacers versus Knicks first?
Let's go Pacers versus Knicks first.
All right. Then Indiana Pacers and the New York Knicks, and I heard some young guys going, This isn't going to draw any ratings. I'm like, this is a classic rivalry.
Yeah.
For those of us in our age group,
yeah,
this is some of the best playoff games we've seen, best playoff series we've seen. Reggie Miller versus the Knicks. It was fantastic. Spike Lee, I personally love the series. I'm excited for both teams. I think it's pretty cool for the NBA. This will be the 7th year with the new champion. I personally like that. So I'm really happy about that. And I'm trying to think, three teams have never won, and the Knicks won in 72, and technically the Thunder won when they were Supersonics in 79.
Right.
So, I mean, somebody's fan base has never seen any of this. I'm really excited for both those teams, but let's get on to the series. So you asked me, you know, in the script, says who you got winning. I got the New York Knicks 5-star. And I've underestimated Indiana the whole time. So go ahead and put that on my record and say, hey, you know, you've underestimated Indiana before. And I'll say, yep, that's true. So I take that with a grain of salt when I'm taking the New York Knicks. But I just think they have too many options here on the defensive end to throw at their main stars. I mean, I got Miles Bridges. I got Josh Hart. I got OG Anunoby. Mitchell Robinson is back. And I don't think he even played any of the matchups they played in the regular season where the Knicks went 2-1 and won the most recent game by, I think, 25 points. They won by like 25 on the season opener. And then Indiana took one in Indiana in the middle of those games. But I really like New York here. I think that another thing they have going in their favor is that if it's a close game, I trust Jalen Brunson more than I trust Haliburton and Siakam. I trust Haliburton and Siakam more to build up a 10-point lead and to make these huge runs and to blow teams out of the water and make them tired. But if the Knicks keep this close, I think they're going to have a huge advantage in execution in the half court. And really, this is Jalen Brunson's really chance to stamp himself as a superstar, because I feel that he's like a little underrated. Like, why do we not talk about him as in the top point guards? Like, why do we not talk about him up there, right, with Shea and these other guys? It's like we always put him a tier below, but what does he need to do? He goes to New York. He takes over the team, and he's been absolutely awesome in the clutch for like three seasons in a row now. So because of Jalen Brunson, because of the strength of the defense, maybe Indiana's got the coaching advantage, but I think Tibbs can keep it close and design some nice schemes here. And also, I don't think New York's going to get tired. Tibbs has got them ready for this. I mean, there's the drawback of all the minutes played, injuries. But the thing is, if you get here and you're healthy, your guys are in pretty good shape. Give me the New York Knicks.
You know, I rode with the Pacers last series, and a lot of people thought that me and Ski were tripping. When remember, you tried to move on. We was like, hold on, wait a second. No.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I skipped over. I thought the Cavaliers were going to – after what the Cavaliers did to the Heat? I mean, yeah.
I have an exacta ticket with the Timberwolves to beat the Knicks. Once again, Jason McIntyre is watching our content, because right after I posted that for plus 1200, a week later he does an article but flips the teams and makes it where the Knicks beats the Timberwolves in an exacta at plus 1200. But I have that ticket in my pocket. So I'm thinking, as far as in NBA ratings, things that the league wants, that was the whole mantra behind that ticket. Now, as the coverage is beginning, I'm starting to like Indiana a lot, man. And the reason I like them so much is, one, they took the Knicks out last year. It's going to be the same formula this year. They send waves at you. The way that Carlisle coaches in the playoffs, with this team. Sorry, I had a lump in my throat. I'm getting something to drink. The way that Carlisle coaches with this squad, man, he's keeping the rotations going. It's not like he shortens his bench during the playoffs like most teams do. And I think that just like last year, they might wear out the Knicks, man. Another thing, I did not like how the Knicks front office was crying and World Wide West. I met him a long time ago in L.A. Player dude, real OG. He's the one reason the Knicks are good. Him and Rose put that team completely back together, because World Wide West is a guy like us. He just understands basketball.
Wait, who are you talking about?
He's the guy who put the team together, World Wide West.
I don't know if I thought you were talking about Worldwide Wobe at first.
No, Worldwide Wobe stole his name. That's the reason he goes by.
Oh, really?
Worldwide West, who runs the Knicks and has
roles. I didn't know any of this.
Worldwide West is a guy kind of like me. He's a round the way kind of guy that knows everybody behind the scenes type of dude. He doesn't.
Oh, God, I did not know this.
He's the one that's managing that team and making all the moves. He runs the team. Dolan put him in control of things, and it was the best move he could have ever done, because he's the first guy to hire like a guy that comes from an entrepreneurial background who approaches basketball a lot different than these nerds nowadays do. So he put together a really smart team, you know, and the first big thing they did was by signing Brunson when he was a free agent. And you and I were not surprised, because when he left from Dallas, remember, I wanted him to come to Houston because I could see the type of player he was going to be. And I remember the player he was at Villanova as the lead guy. So Worldwide West has done a phenomenal job. But him and Rose are like crying on the floor after they beat the Celtics. And you saw the New York fans are all in the streets, like tearing up cars like they won the Super Bowl in Philadelphia or something. And that troubled me, because I'm like, you guys are just looking over the team that beat you last year and aren't even thinking about them. So I just think it's too much Knicks love, man. It just depends. If the books want to clean up and let them play, the Pacers are going to win, man. But if it's a ticket thing where the NBA is like, man, we'll make more money off of Timberwolves versus Knicks and we get a bad whistle on the Pacers, then yeah. But I honestly think team-wise that the Pacers are the deeper team. and probably the better team. They definitely had a better coach. So I would be careful for all of the people who are taking the New York Knickerbockers.
Let's go player by player. Okay. Who do you like better, Miles Turner or Mitchell Robinson?
Come on, man.
I like Robinson better.
Why?
Because I don't care about scoring, like, and he's an excellent Turner defense.
And Miles Turner is 7 foot. He can block shots. He can step outside and shoot about.
I don't want my center out there. I want Mitchell Robinson down low. But
he can go back to
goal
too. He can put his back to the basket and go either arm, man, with left or right hand hook. He just doesn't work the paint because their system is a four out. So that
they make him go out. Yeah. Okay.
He's a versatile player. I've been watching Miles Turner.
I love Mitchell Robinson because to me, he's everything that fantasy players hate. All he does is help you win without just getting a single stat. He didn't even look on when the other guys are grabbing rebounds. Robinson's pushing his guy like 5 feet out of the paint. So, okay.
Well, he won't get that chance against the Pacers because he's going to have to be out on the perimeter.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they do that. And, of course, I'm trying to think. I don't think he played in the series last year, if I remember right.
Halliburton is better than Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson is a better closer and scorer. Yeah, he is, man. Yeah. Halliburton is a way better player all around than Jalen Brunson, man. He's a better
passer, that's it, but
Brunson is a scorer. He's always been a great scoring point guard, man. He has a lot of heart and he plays with a lot of fire, and he's just a guy who's a grinder. He's been in that gym so long with his father practicing those shots. It's like, you know, muscle memory to him, and he's a great player with a really cold pulse. Like, he never gets shook in big moments, so he's the best closer in the NBA, and he was deserving of that award. But all around, you're not going to take 6 foot Jalen Brunson, who's kind of like a problem on defense and, you know, a score first.
Well, Halliburton's a problem on defense too, so that's not different.
But Halliburton gets a lot of steals, man. And Halliburton.
No, he does. He should be better. He was actually a good defender. Where did he go to school?
Bro, he was like the best defender in the Big 12 when he was.
Yeah, I know. And it's so crazy to see him.
It's the NBA. It's the NBA. But if he needs to lock down and play D, he has some skills and he's tall, man. Has a lot of length and reach. People don't know Tyrese Halliburton unless you watch college basketball. He plays like point, but he also was off the ball a lot at Iowa State because Tyrese Hunter was there, who's now with Memphis and went to Texas. These guys are in school forever. he was there with him and he was the off guard. But yeah, man, I think that Tyrese is a more complete player than him. And I think that his experience in the Olympics, even though he didn't get a chance to get a lot of run, just practicing with those guys and sitting on the bench the same way as elevated Anthony Edwards game, you know, just a notch more. I think so with Halliburton. He has made some really big plays in the playoffs, man. You know, like that sequence that he had against the Celtics was against the Cavs was unbelievable when they stole that game in Cleveland. One of the most just as memorable as the one Brunson, but because people don't like Halliburton, I guess they don't like him because he likes white girls or whatever, and he's mixed and kind of goofy and, you know, kind of acts different than the typical cool guy, you know. But Brunson's married to a white girl too. I guess it's just the fact that they think that Brunson's tougher, you know. I don't know, but I like Halliburton. I think the Tyrese.
No, I do too. I was actually lamenting to him. I can't remember. I was on the NBA rundown earlier. Mm-hmm. I can't believe we traded Tyrese Halliburton for Domantas Sabonis.
Like, we talked about this on the show three years ago?
Yeah, no, I remember. I was upset about it.
And we were like, why didn't they trade Fox? They should have kept Halliburton because he wants to be there. Wherever he went, Halliburton was going to be the leader of that team and a point guard that got everybody involved and averaged double-digit assists. But the thing is, what people don't realize, and I do because I watched all of his college games at Iowa State, he's a score first really guy. He changed his game and became an assist guy to run their system. Efficient with the ball, probably the only guy in the league that could play 100 miles per hour and still have zero turnovers for the game, you know? So I just think that the Pacers are really slept on, man, you know?
Who do you like better, Siakam or Towns?
Siakam. And the reason why is because Siakam can always get a basket. Siakam also has the experience of being in the finals and being a big part of the finals. I mean, you can really say that him and Kawhi Leonard were kind of 1A, 1B for that MVP in that series. Because Siakam was big. He's just a really versatile guy because he can shoot the three, but he can also put it on the ground. Whereas the thing about Carl Anthony Towns, my complaint about him forever has been he's 7 foot, but he has no back to the goal game at all. He can't, when he gets the ball down low, it's only one thing he can do, face you up and run into you full speed and hope that the refs give him a foul and, or either go through you and get a layup. Like, he doesn't have any go-to moves. He's just a three-point shooter. So I always call him and Miles Turner funny. They're matching up now. I call them the most talented sorry guys in the league. And I say this because they could do everything, but that disposition is just so sorry. You know what I'm saying? Like they kind of like goofy dudes. So, Kat, I do think Siakam is better. Now that you're breaking down,
that's the one. That's the one I'll give you because Kat can't play defense, and Siakam I can go get a stop with him if I need.
Right.
Yeah, what about OG or Mathurin? Ananobi or Mathurin?
Who's that?
Ananobi or Mathurin?
You gonna compare Ananobi with Mathurin? Wouldn't you more put him with? I guess.
I don't know. Yeah. I was just thinking the threes. They're both threes, right?
Yeah. Well, you gotta go with OG. Come on, OG, dude.
Okay. Cool. Finally, you gave me one. And then we'll go.
The highest paid dick in history. Like, it is for a reason.
How about let's go Neesmith or Josh Hart?
Josh Hart has the hustle, but Neesmith hustles too, and he doesn't get enough recognition for how hard he plays on defense, especially in the playoffs, because the Pacers play fast and up tempo in the regular season, but don't think that Rick Carlisle, one of the greatest defensive coaches ever, has forgot how to coach defense. He realized it's a cardio league. So, yeah, in the regular season we run, but they can lock down in half court, man. We saw them do it against the Knicks
Since the All-Star break, the Pacers are seventh in defensive rating. And so we don't think that they're a good defense because we see them give up 128 every night. But they're scoring 142, and they have the highest pace of play in the league. So that's why, especially for defense, I'd rather use defensive rating over 100 possessions as compared to just – points per game allowed, because that's just a byproduct of pace. All right. Anything more on the Pacers and the Knicks?
I'll just say this. Even though I have the Knicks facing the Timberwolves and I bet it out, the hype and the energy of everything, I will be putting in a ticket for the Pacers to win the series, man, because I just think that they're the better team. And once again, as I said, I just think it's going to be a little bit too much hype going on for the Knicks, man. And when the public and all of this money is behind you, it's kind of dangerous. Another guy to keep an eye on, the unsung hero for the Pacers, Nembhard. Nembhard is a good player. He's a B, A-minus guard in the league. The public doesn't know it, but Pacers fans and guys who watch the NBA like us do know it. So I expect a lot from Nembhard. I think the Nembhard is more the guy that you should have been comparing to OG. And I think that the difference also is you got guys like McConnell.
You like Nembhard better than Miles Bridges? Or Mikal, I mean?
Mikal Bridges is a good player, but he's streaky with his scoring. Yeah. The thing I like about Nembhard is he's a true combo guard. If you need him to score, he can do that. But he could take Tyrese off the ball and really make a play. Like, he can make a play off the dribble. It doesn't matter, and get a good shot for himself or his teammates. He's a true point guard. He was a point guard when he played in college at Gonzaga. So I think that Nembhard's a really good player. And also, just keep an eye on the Pacers bench, man. The Pacers bench is going to have –
Pacers definitely have the bench advantage.
Yeah, they're going to have a huge advantage, man. And if you start getting the Knicks in foul trouble, which I know that Rick Carlisle is smart enough to do, they're hurting if one of those first five guys foul out.
Yeah. All right. So that'll be an interesting one, and we'll check
who
back.
Who you like in game one in that one?
I haven't bet that game yet. I like the Knicks, but I think 4.5 is too much. If I would have bet – it's so funny how 1 point matters, but 3.5, I was considering it. At 4.5, I'm out. It's Pacers or pass for me on game one, but I'll probably pass. And I like the over in that game. These teams go over a majority of the times that they play. And I'm just not betting a Pacers under. So, and quietly, the New York Knicks increased their pace this year, too. We kind of think of them as this plodding team that they were in the 90s under Pat Riley. But this year, they got up and down the floor and they started running. So I like the over the best for game one. If I had to bet it, I'd take Pacers plus 4.5, but I don't love it. I like my bet for tonight. I'm a lot better.
Okay. Well, let's get to that.
So tonight, 5-star, we're already on the same thing because I saw the script. Give me the Minnesota Timberwolves. This line should be 4. How is this line 7? It's just wild to me.
Yeah, it's crazy.
The Oklahoma City Thunder are not 5 points better than the Minnesota Timberwolves. I mean, come on.
Lineup. They're man for man, Timberwolves have a lot more talent. But OKC right now, and the only reason we can say that is because the regular season, they're the better team. They play as a team better. But man for man, the Timberwolves are much more talented.
Yeah. This is another one where let's see if depth matters, because I do believe OKC has a huge depth advantage. And that's also one of the reasons I think they had this historic net rating this year, because we always talk about it. You know, the starters win you the games, but the bench covers the spread. So I always say, if you're going to bet the NBA, you better start learning these bench players. You better start watching the second quarter between the 12th and the 8th minute, because that's when your spreads are going to get covered. You know, it sucks, right? I want to bet on LeBron. I want to bet on Jokic. Yeah, but those guys aren't going to cover the spread for you. Those decide who wins the game.
Yeah.
I do think the OKC has the better bench, because even when, you know, they were taking their starters out, they were still beating other team starters. However, you know, we talked about in the playoffs, bench doesn't really matter that much. What do they say? You trust 7, you play 8. I mean, that's how the playoffs have always gone, right? You go to 8-man rotation, and it's essentially 7, because that 8th guy might only play 5 to 7 minutes. So I think the Minnesota Timberwolves are going to be able to absorb the lack of depth. I think it's kind of the same way I do. You can say Shea's a better player and Shea MVP, blah, 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 blah. But in the clutch, give me Anthony Edwards, man. Give me Anthony Edwards. I like him better as a half-court scorer. I like him just better as a dog, a guy that doesn't need to rely on the whistle. If you're going to play him physical, he's just going to finish through contact. I don't know if Shea can do that. I also think the Timberwolves have a much better option. And I was telling Tyler today, because we did the NBA rundown before we did this show, can you imagine if I said this at the beginning of the year? But I think Julius Randle's a better option than Jalen Williams as a number two right now. Right now, I think two years from now, Jalen Williams is going to be way better. Yeah. But right now, Julius Randle's a much better player. Rudy Gobert's playing my Isaiah Hartenstein role, right? He's blocking shots, grabbing rebounds, you know, taking up space, setting picks. That's fine. That's pretty much a wash there. And then the key to the series is really going to be Jaden McDaniels. Because they're just assuming he's going to give excellent defense. So let's just assume that. But they're going to need a good game from him on the offensive end. And if we see games where Jaden McDaniels going over 17, going over 18, I almost think that if you want to make a little extra money and you think the Timberwolves are going to win games, just do the Jalen point prop or Jaden McDaniels point prop plus the Timberwolves to win the game money line. Because I think that he's that their key to their success. Here's my main concern for the Timberwolves, 5-star, and that's the bevy of options that this Thunder team has to throw at Anthony Edwards. They can start with Lu Dort, who's an absolute dog, and he's one of the strongest people under 6'3" in the NBA. Then they can switch to Caruso, who's already shown multiple times that he can just be an annoying defender and just make you work the hell out of the ball. And even then, I think Kayson Wallace is an excellent on-ball defender and can give Ant some problems in short stints here. So not the fact that it's not just one guy that he's going to have to beat, maybe learn the tendencies, the fact they can cycle him, I think that's a big edge for the Thunder. So, but we've seen it before in the NBA. Good offense beats good defense, and I'm just trusting Ant. As good as those guys are and as bad as they made the Denver Nuggets and Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. look, I don't think they're going to be able to do that to Anthony Edwards. That's why I'm on the Timberwolves for this series. And like I said, I think this price is wrong. I think game one should have been plus 4. I think the series price should have been between plus 150 to plus 170. And we're getting plus 250 and plus 7, plus 7.5, depending on your market timing entry. Give me the Timberwolves.
Yeah, I love the Timberwolves tonight. And for the series, you guys know, I've spoken so many times about what we're seeing now 2 years ago, talked about on the show. I've tweeted it on X. Anthony Edwards needed Cat away from him. And I'm glad that the front office from Timberwolves saw it. Not because Cat was a bad player, not because they didn't get along. It's just they didn't want Cat's bad habits to rub off on Ant. Ant's an alpha male, and he was the type of guy that's such a kind kid that the way that he was welcomed into that locker room and automatically put into leadership with Cat, he always is going to love Cat. He got respect for Cat because he's just a good dude. They're both good guys. And he wasn't going to ever be able to really put him in his place like he needed to be. So they did the perfect thing, shipped him out. Jaden McDaniels, unsung hero. One of my favorite players at Washington when he was with the Huskies. I knew that he was going to translate perfectly to the NBA as a 2 or 3 option, the definition of a 3-and-D wing. Like, this kid is great. 6'9", long arms, great on switches, plays hard, always hustle, makes the right play. A lot better offensive IQ than people realize. He can handle the ball. He can do a lot of things, but he's become a dead-eye shooter. And I think that he's going to be a big thing for the Timberwolves in this one. I also think that Julius Randle sees this as a time of redemption. He can just play his game, man. That's the great thing about it. And we forget how talented Julius Randle is. And, you know, the great coach, Chris Finch. I really like Chris Finch. I love guys like him who paid their dues. He's coached everywhere, man, overseas, G League, worked his way all the way up, man, been an assistant on so many benches, have seen everything. And he realized the correct way to use Julius Randle and also the type of leader that Ant is. He sets a tone in that locker room where everyone's loose and confident. So we're seeing the best out of Julius Randle, and we're reminded now that he's like the closest thing we've probably seen to a Larry Johnson or Charles Barkley in modern day basketball. He's a bully ball guy. He's strong, super athletic, quick, kind of slash, I put him like a Michael Beasley slash Charles Barkley type of player, man. But those type of hybrid guys are really hard to defend because wings are too small to hold them and big guys are too slow. So he's always a matchup problem. When I look at OKC in the playoffs, even against the Nuggets, but the Nuggets just didn't have enough. You know, they just didn't have enough in the tank. When I was looking at the games, I used to always tell Ski if we was watching together or if I'm watching at home, like, I think to myself, like, damn, these dudes look small as hell compared to Denver. You know what I mean? Like, really small and skinny and slender. They're lighting ass, you know? They're the skinny jeans guys. So they're going to go against some real bullies with Minnesota. They're going to be putting that weight on them. They don't have an answer for Gobert. They don't have an answer for Ant. They don't have an answer for Julius Randle. And now the Timberwolves are already experienced with playing a good defense because we know that Steve Kerr and that Golden State defense is supreme at game planning to take away superstars. And he was able to figure out his way, allow his team to carry him in the first half and make the right basketball plays and not try to force things against the defense that Golden State was running. Then wait until they tire down in the fourth quarter. And now he can kind of hit his little burst because he has young man's energy. You know, that's the thing about Ant. He falls, hurts his ankle, gets right back up. He falls hard and you think his knee's messed up and he's gone for the year and he gets right back up because he has that young man's spirit and energy, man. And nothing can ever beat youth. So talented youth, let me put it like that. So I just think that everything in this series for me says the Timberwolves. Like, I think that OKC was a really good regular season team. I think they have a really good coach, and I think they have a really smart system. But it is a system. You know, at the end of the day, can I trust SGA just to go bucket for bucket when it matters? Like, and I'm not
And the whistle's not going to be – you're not getting 14 free throws a game.
I can't trust him because Ant's playing through the whistle, you know, and Ant's a much better three-point shooter. At least he has been in the playoffs. I don't know what the numbers say, but through the playoffs, he's a better three-point shooter as well. I just like how this Timberwolves team is playing, and I think that people think that Gobert might get played off the floor. I think they're just going to go zone, you know, and find ways to keep him in the game because on offense, he's going to be a problem for OKC. He should get so many dunks, it's ridiculous. That's why I like him tonight to go over. He should get 8 points, like, you know, just on dunks alone. He should get 4 dunks. So I think that this series goes to Minnesota, and I think that Minnesota is the better team, and they were my pick at the beginning of the year to come out the West.
Well, that's a great pick there, because I'll tell you what, I was a little concerned with them, but they've definitely risen to the occasion after kind of falling under the radar. You know, they finished the regular season 18-4. So that's an excellent winning percentage. Then they go 4-1 in two series against established veterans with playoff experience. And what do we always say? Playoffs are about experience. Playoffs are about grown men. Da, da, da. Well, they went toe-to-toe with the experienced teams, right? They beat LeBron James, Luka Doncic, Jimmy Butler, and Steph Curry.
Yeah. So
I think they're completely ready for this moment. I'm really happy to have the Timberwolves +7.5 in my pocket for tonight. It's +7. I still like it at +7. And I also like the series price at +250.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to the world of tennis. Five-star, have you placed any bets? I got 3 in my pocket. You're not going to like one of them.
Yeah, I know you took your girl, Iga.
No, I did not.
Okay, who did you take?
I was a chalk monster on the other side, and I took Alcaraz.
Yeah, he should get it done. I would not be surprised if Sinner upsets him. And the only reason why is because if they get to the finals, with what just happened in Rome, most likely Sinner would be the underdog. And you know, when these two guys, we've been betting a long time spreading, especially on 10. When it's two guys who are equally good, I always take the dog because you're flipping the coin. So you want to take the odds. And we've seen it so many times when Djokovic is beating Carlos at +200, you know, and we know he doesn't have the type of athleticism he used to have to even be playing with Carlos, but it happens. And with Carlos beating him in Rome, that had to, boy.
I loved it. And I'll tell you what, that flipped me on it. And I'll tell you why. When Carlos beat Sinner earlier, and this is where, you know, you can't just look at the stats. You got to watch these matches. What was he doing? He was going to the net and he was putting points away quickly. He was ultra aggressive. What did he do this time? He out-rallied him from the baseline. So when I saw that versatility in the attack, where it's just like, I don't need to just implement this game plan to beat you. I can actually beat you at your own game. It really got me excited for Alcaraz to win there. So I just took him on the men's side. I only have one play and I have 2 over on the women's side. I don't love him as much.
Who do you got?
Quinn Wenzhang and Paolini, just because I need to get more than 10-1 on the women's side. I think it's too wide open.
I agree with you. I got Paolini too. I already put in a ticket on
18-1.
I got it at mine was 12-1, so it's went up some. Okay. So I need to go get it again. Okay, I took her as well. I could see that easily. She was a finalist last year. She's playing really good tennis, coming off a Rome victory over Coco. And now Coco can beat her if they play again in the French, because now you got the revenge factor. And now that they're 2-2. It's just Coco has to get her serve together. Coco gets her serve together, which is a big IF. If she can get her serve game together, she'll win it this year because Iga doesn't have the confidence that she's had in the past. And I think that when you look at all the players on tour, when they're playing the best game that they can play right now, is Sabalenka and Coco is the top two. And I think Iga's on the outside looking in just because her game just isn't coming together right now like it was before. Whereas in Coco, she's hitting on all cylinders, that she has played really well at points of this season. She has a chance to win the French. We know she wants the French probably more than Wimbledon. I think that she really wants that title just because everyone knows it as the Iga title, you know, and their careers are kind of compared to each other. Even though Coco's about 3 years younger than her, they're still in the same little age, little timeline, you know. Sabs is getting old. I didn't realize she was 27 now, you know, so we'll see how she performs. She's not been a really good clay court player over the years. She's gotten a lot better. She does well in high altitude out of Madrid, but not so much on the slower clay.
I mean, Sabs is the rightful favorite. If we just had a tennis podcast, right, and we just talked about tennis, we didn't care about prices, Sabs should be the favorite. She should be the favorite. But you're only getting like +250 on her? No way. Look at the way the women's field is going. And one of those women could win. But I'm just saying, long term, you can't bet into Iga at this number. You can't bet into a Sabalenka at that number. And I don't even want to bet in Coco on that number. And I'll tell you one more little tip I have for Coco. When you're watching her live and you're thinking about live betting her, watch that second serve and watch the speed. Once it starts dipping below the 80s, I feel like I'm watching Dasha, Daria Kasatkina all over again.
Yeah.
You're giving me 75 mile an hour second serve. That's why there's so much mental stuff that goes on in tennis team with Iga.
Right, who's coaching her right now? She's still with Matagorda school, right?
I'm gonna look it up. I thought it was. Hold on. That's a good question, actually.
Cause she fired what's his name last year after she won the U.S.
She fired Brad Gilbert
because he was getting on her nerves, but she should have kept him because Brad Gilbert did a great job. He won the major under him, even though he's getting on his nerves. That's what he's supposed to do. He's your coach,
and that's why I don't know. The new man is named Matt Daly,
man,
and there's another guy named John Christopher Farrell who I'm not familiar with either.
If my girl Mahova plays. Watch her. Mahova's always one to watch if she can be healthy enough to finish the tournament. That's my girl. You know, I feel like she the closest thing we're going to see to Ash Barty. The difference is Ash Barty never had injuries. She was always the most fit girl on tour. And
I still can't believe she retired. That's just crazy. Yeah.
She went and had a
family. Like some Barry Sanders. It's like Barry Sanders.
She just went and had a family. She married a golfer. I think her husband was a golfer.
Yeah, so, she likes golf too. She was actually going to try and play on the professional. She wanted to be an LPGA player.
She's that talented. I think she was like a pro cricket player.
Yeah, she quit. She quit tennis once and played cricket for a while.
Pro. Ash was Ash, and Ash was a really good player, man. And she reminds me of Mahova with they're so athletic, have all these different shots they can make, like slice. They can go to the baseline. They can attack the net, serve and volley. So I just want Mahova to get healthy for 1 year before she gets too old because she's right in her little back end of being prime in tennis. She's like 27. Her and Sabalenka is about the same age. So hopefully she can get healthy and have a little run. But she's always one of my favorites to watch in any of these major tournaments, and especially at the French. You know, she's been to the finals and could have beat Iga. She blew it. She had the match on her racket in the third set a couple years ago. And boy, I would have made a killing on that one because I had so much money on it. And I remember I was on BetUS back then with Noops doing tennis and Flash. Shout out Noops and Flash. I was with those guys covering the French Open. And I remember I took Mahova and everybody thought I was crazy because I think the first round, who did she play? She might have played Pagulia or somebody in the first round that they thought that she was going to lose to. And she got it done and she went on a run. But I'll be playing a long shot ticket on Mahova for sure because you can start hedging it after she gets because she's going to get to the quarterfinals. But I don't know how her draw is going to be this year because she hasn't been playing much. But I'll be looking at her. Man, Coco, I can't trust. I'm not even wasting the money investing in her, to be honest. So I want to be betting her. But I already got a ticket on Paulina. But I will be rooting for Coco. You know, she's my favorite because she represents America. She's the number one American player right now. So I don't expect much from Pagulia. She's getting long in the tooth as well. She's a little bit older than Sabs. I think she's 30 now. So, and she's not a good clay player. Her best chance of winning a major will be at the U.S. Open. So I'll be looking at those two girls.
Or Wimbledon. I think she can do Wimbledon.
Yeah, her game kind of goes Wimbledon. She does play a little fast paced because she does have some good plus ones that she does on offense and stuff. And she can hit from the baseline. That her forehand is really trustworthy, unlike Coco. It's so weird. Hakeem was asking me, he was like, don't most people their forehand is their best shot? Why Coco?
Yeah.
The forehand, I say, I don't know. Because it's crazy because she's deadly with her two-hand backhand, but she isn't good with the forehand. And on the men's side.
I remember when I was a kid, we used to all copy Agassi. It would have to be like way in the corner to hit a backhand. We ran around that thing like crazy.
Yeah, because Agassi was the first guy who was really, I'm not say the first.
Making it popular. I'm sure people did it before, but in our generation, he was the first one to make it popular. To like,
you
really had to go wide on the backhand side to get him to hit a backhand. He ran around that thing like crazy.
Yeah, he did. I used to love watching old Andre Agassi. I still remember when I was very small at home and he made that Wimbledon run, one of the most memorable runs. We've seen at that tournament, it made a lot of people in America happy, man, including myself.
But on the men's side, I'll put a flyer out on Verver. This is his last really? Opportunity. Yeah, Rafael Nadal's gone. He has mm-hmm. the experience of beating Alcaraz more than once in the French Open. So he won't be, you know, lacking confidence. And we know that the public's going to be all on the dial. So we'll have that side going for us. So I think Verver might can make some noise this year. You know, he doesn't have
a lot. You know what's crazy? We haven't even talked about Djokovic. He's plus 400, and I didn't even consider it. I just scrolled right on by.
Yeah, it's no need. I wouldn't be surprised if he retires this year at the end of the year.
He probably should, man. He probably should.
Yeah, because he doesn't even seem like we know how crazy he is about winning. Like, he doesn't even seem like he's caring about these losses. It's like, oh, I lost to the 100th player in the world. It's okay. I got to get better. Yeah. The old joke bitch would have been in there, like, going crazy, you know? So, slamming his racket and stuff. I think he's kind of at peace, man. Like, now past it. He only cared about beating Nadal and Federer. He wanted to make sure that he was remembered better than them and having more titles. Yeah. And after they retired, he, you know, like, man, it's kind of like us. In our little age group, if you outlast your main hater, you like, man, I did it. Everything else you don't care about. Like, I beat my main too.
The other thing is, I think he's pretty self-aware, and he played that grueling style too, just like Andy Murray. So I think he knows, like, my body's done. Like, bro, this car hit 300,000 miles. I got to get a new, you know, it did what it was supposed to do. But, you know, it's
time to move on. Senna's the closest thing I've seen to him. Because Senna, to me, plays just like him. Like, you look at them playing. Like, I guess Senna could say his forehand. Djokovic, what's his, you know, signature shot? Federer had the backhand. You know?
I would say the backhand for Djokovic, even though Federer's was 10 times prettier.
It was just gorgeous.
Nails.
Yeah, it was
Djokovic was just like hitting the wall.
He could put it anywhere. He could put that thing anywhere. He was so nice. He taught it to Stan Wawrinka, because I know that's where he got it from, the way he was able to put it. You know, they were teammates and good friends and stuff from the same country. But, yeah, I think Sinner's a lot like him, a grinder. Even though he does have that big forehead, he gets to a lot of balls and kind of just outgrinds you. And that's a tough style to play. You know, it's a lot easier to play like Carlos, where you can do so many different things and get these points over quick. I do like Carlos to win Wimbledon this year, though. I think that's the tournament that I'm going to be for sure heavy on him, because I think he'll be really ticked if he doesn't win French Open and he'll come to Wimbledon and run through it. Because it's strange. Everyone compares him to Nadal because he's from Spain, but he plays a lot more like a grass player and more like Federer. That was who he looked up to, you know? So,
you
can see it. All right, let's get to the bowling parlay spread and get the people some winners tonight.
Yeah, it looks like you got some other ones on here, but my favorite play for tonight was your first one. We already talked about it earlier. I'm on the Timberwolves plus 7. Go ahead and give them your two. You already mentioned one of them earlier, but we haven't talked in the UFL at all. So go ahead and break down that game too.
So it'll be a show play spread, and I both are going to be on plus 7 with the T-Wolves. It'll be a 5% for me, and then I'll also play probably 2% on the Timberwolves money line as well. I think that they can get it done tonight. They were 2-2 this year, and they both teams won on each other's court. So Minnesota will not be at all afraid going into Oklahoma City tonight. All right. I also said Gobert. I think he get 8 points. I think that he scores double digits, but 8 points is safe, and that's what the number is right now. You can either do plus 8 points or more, I think, for like minus 130, or you could do 8.5, I think, at minus 110 or 105. So either one of those are good, in my opinion. I've been killing it on the UFL. That's been our main money winner. That in tennis with the group. Memphis Showboats, they're getting 4.5 against Arlington. Arlington won the XFL championship a few years back. Bob Stoops coaches them. Always got a high-powered offense. You got Tyler Vaughn, who used to be a good receiver, USC, is almost, you know, like unguardable in the UFL. But the Showboats are really hot right now. The thing that I like about them most is their defensive line. They've been dominant in the trenches. I don't think Arlington will be able to run the ball at all. That means they got to drop back and throw it every down. And Luis Perez is not a guy you want doing that. He's going to turn the ball over. Showboats have a multitude of quarterbacks. I think it'll be Williams this week, but whoever's there doesn't matter, because they got some great receivers on the outside who are strong and physical, and they're just playing with a lot of momentum. this league only allows four teams to go to the playoffs, so we're going to see the best out of all of the teams that are in the mix these next couple weeks. Give me the Showboats +4.5 and money line +180. That'll be for Saturday. You guys get that in right now early before the number changes, because I'm guessing to be +3 by the weekend. We're going to try.
That's a great thing about us going live now, huh?
Yeah.
If you're watching, you can get the number.
Yeah.
You know how frustrating it was for Five Star and I for us to do a show in the morning, then we do a little editing, and we give out Minnesota +7, and it's +5.5 for all the viewers.
Yeah, that hurts. But the thing was, we had a vibe that I loved about the show. You know, I love the music, because I wanted it to be always, when you think about the wagering world, just like the shirt says, you go get the merch at www.thewageringworld.com. I do it for the underground and the underdogs, man. So that's underground music, the underground culture, and also for, we like to bet the dogs, like we are tonight, taking the 7 with Minnesota. So I just, the music is part of me, because you know I love music.
We'll get DJ Cino back pretty soon. We'll get DJ Cino up in here.
Yeah,
we'll figure out a way to get going.
Well, I'm working on trying to get Alchemist in here as the DJ. I want him.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Man, I want him in the back on the show set DJing. That's the goal within the next 24 months as we keep growing this show, man. You guys hit that like button if you haven't already. Subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Go to www.thewageringworld.com right now. Get this merch like I have on right now. It's Us Versus Machine and a plethora of other things. You can also subscribe for a free pick as well. Anything for the people, spread before we get out of here?
No, it was a fun show today, and I'm looking forward to Friday. So just follow us on Twitter, or you know what's easier? Is just subscribe to the channel. You'll be notified when we go live. And as you see, we kind of got some weird times here, but we're trying to coordinate multiple schedules here to get these shows done. So sometimes we don't even know when we're going live. Sometimes we're texting them in the morning, and we don't even know what time we're doing it. So you'll be notified when we go live. Please subscribe to the channel. Give us that thumbs up. We appreciate your support here from the Wagering World.
Always love, guys. As always, I dedicate this show to my father, the greatest Houston sports fan that I know. And that's John H. Lindsay. I do this for you, Dad. As Spread said, we'll be back by the end of the week. Hopefully Friday, we'll have Ski in here and we'll talk some French Open. Probably review some of these game ones. Also, I do like the Pacers +4.5 in that first game tomorrow, because we won't be on. I do like the Pacers in that one. I think it's a short number, and I would not be surprised if the Pacers go in and win game one. The Knicks have to be dog tired after that grueling series that they had with the Celtics. For Spread of Stare, I'm Five Star in Vegas. You guys hit that like button. Remember, it's always Us Versus the Machine. This is the Wagering World.